Joining me right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is the head basketball coach at George Mason, Tony Skin. His first season in Fairfax at his alma mater was a good one. Mason won 20 games last year, and they won at home over a top 25 team for the first time in program history. I would have thought that they would have done that with one of the teams that Tony played on under Jim Larinaga, but they beat 16th-ranked Dayton last year, had an excellent season, and of course, many of you remember Tony Skin as a significant part of the 2006 Mason team that made that incredible run to the Final Four. But Coach was also an Olympian back in 2012 in London, representing Nigeria, the country in which he was born. It was the first Olympics for Nigeria. Coach, thanks. I really appreciate you making time and doing this for me.
No, absolutely. I appreciate you guys taking the time to have me on.
You know, I was thinking about Nigeria the first time they were in the Olympics was 2012. Did Hakeem just not play international ball? I mean, I would have thought one of the Olajuwon teams would have qualified for the Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good, right? I believe Hakeem Olajuwon actually played for Team USA, did he not?
I think he had ended up doing that, but I'm talking about when he was, you know, in college at Houston and maybe when he was a younger player. He didn't ever represent Nigeria internationally. You might be right.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, I'm not that old, so out of my jurisdiction. But you know, I'm sure that you know, our federation is always evolving. You know, year to year, Olympics to Olympic, you know, international competition to competition, and so. I would imagine probably back in the 80s when Hakeem was, you know, on his rise, I would imagine that the federation just wasn't quite there yet. You know, the foundation of our country when it comes to basketball, there's a lot of American Nigerians. And so that's the one reason why you've just kind of seen the growth of Nigerian basketball because of that dynamic.
Most famous Nigerian athlete of all time, Olajuwon or Christian Okoye?
Hakeem Olajuwon, not even close.
Yeah, that's what I would think. Before we get to talking about the Olympics and you know, the U.S. won yesterday, so they're 2-0 in group stage. Tell me about your team. What do you have coming back? Who do you have coming in? What's George Mason going to be in the A-10 in 2024-2025?
Yeah, honestly, I think we're going to have a chance to be a lot tougher. We're going to have a chance to be a lot deeper. You know, we've got a pretty big team. We return, you know, Darius Faddix, who averaged over 14 points a game, was top 10 in the country in 3-point field goal percentage. You know, he's one of those guys that, you know, if he's not first team preseason all A-10, then, you know, the league better be damn good. He's a tremendous young man and, you know, a leader that I think he'll step up to be one of the better players, not only in our league, but in the country. Jared Billups, you know, he's the guy that wins. Doesn't always get the stats to show it after the game, but he wins the Hard Hat Award. He was a big piece of us getting our 20th win against Richmond at the end of the season. And obviously, you know, Richmond was the best team in our league, and we kind of had our backs against the wall with some injuries down the stretch. And, you know, Jared Billups went out there and just basically played incredible defense on Jordan King, who was league MVP, and shut him down to 2 points. And so his leadership, his physicality, his defensive mindset, you know, having that in your backyard for another year is going to help us. We also bring back Woody Newton, who was a big piece for us last year down the stretch, versatile, kind of a 3-4 that can do a little bit of everything. We bring back Austin Ball, who stepped up and won some games for us as a freshman. We have the big fella, Jalen Haynes, who actually sat out last year, who's got a chance to be, I think, one of the better combo forwards in our league. You know, he's a 15-point, 9-point scorer at East Tennessee State before he transferred over to us. And then we bring in some pretty good pieces. Katie Johnson, who started, you know, over 100 games in the SEC. You know, he's one of those competitors that, you know, you love him when he's on your team and you hate him when he's not. Right. He just brings that overall experience. Zach Anderson, who's another piece that I'm really excited about with his ability to shoot the basketball, his ability to be able to play with a lot of freedom, but also know how to play within the team. He shot over 45% from three last year. I'm still not sure why he didn't get more touches. So I'm excited about him, especially at that four spot. We've got a big Nigerian kid that came over from Siena, just a big, you know, physical 6'10". He's as physical looking as you, as you're going to get in college basketball. He probably belongs in the Big Ten more than the 8'10". You know, he's dynamic. He's athletic. He's a rim protector. Braden O'Connor, who I'm excited about at the combo position, you know, can play a little bit of both guard spots, spent some time at UMass Lowell. He's tough. He's a defender, you know, offensive minded, but also can guard as well. Wants to guard. Jaquan Quinterly from Iona, you know, another guard that averaged 14 points a game and, you know, four assists. Really got going down the stretch for Iona, a local kid that's going to be, you know, he's going to have a chance to play some point for us. And then, you know, I can't leave out the freshmen, you know, Justin Begg and Bryson Coakley, who show that, you know, they're going to have a chance to compete for some minutes here. And so we've got a pretty strong foundation coming back from last year, but there's some key pieces that I think can help us, you know, with our versatility, but also with our depth.
Wow. You know, what you just described, when you started to go through the players that are transferring into Mason, and I just read that your transfer class is top 50 in the nation. Yep. You understand this. You coached, you know, you were at Maryland with Kevin Willard. You were at Seton Hall with Kevin Willard. You were at Ohio State as an assistant before you became the head coach at Mason last year. You understand better than anybody does, you know, the challenges of a George Mason in the Atlantic 10. It's, you know, re-recruiting your own, and you're able to keep that one key player that you talked about, that Darius Maddox. And I would have imagined that he would have been sought after. Mason and the A-10 schools, right, typically are the schools that lose these players to NIL and to transfer pool. How have you been able to keep your best player there and then get a top 50 transfer class coming in?
I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, the A-10 has a couple problems. No one wants to play us schedule-wise, but then everyone wants to come pick apart our players. And
right.
So, you know, it's one of those things where you could be a role player in the A-10, put up some solid numbers, not great. You know, somebody, you jump in the portal, someone in the Power 5 is going to come grab you because the league is respected. And retention is something that we're going to always struggle with. I think that's something that regardless of the level, regardless of the conference, if you play well, you know, you're probably better suited in the portal if it's a financial decision. If you don't play well, you're probably going to go in the portal and get another opportunity. And so I'm one of those coaches. I'm not complaining about it. This is just the way it is. We've got to be able to adapt to it as coaches. I think that, you know, one of the reasons why we've been successful is the staff that I've put together. Just a bunch of hungry guys that just really know how to build those relationships if they're not, you know, already existing relationships. I think we've got a little bit of a cheat code here in the DMV just because we're so familiar with so many of these kids in different ways, whether it's through friends that coach high school programs or AAU programs, or whether it's kids that we recruited, you know, on the front end that ends up coming back to us on the back end. Darius Maddox is an example. I recruited him when I was at Seton Hall. When I got the job here, you know, he was like, "Coach, I'm coming to George Mason." I barely recruited him. But again, those type of relationships, those type of kids and their families, you know, that's a big reason why we were able to retain a couple guys that I think, you know, if they would have went in that portal, you know, they would have gotten, you know, they would have gotten some money. And Darius Maddox, knowing kind of just what's on the other side, a guy that, you know, he's played at the high major level. He spent some time at Virginia Tech, and he was successful there. Knowing that he made that jump in his development, that's something that he wasn't willing to risk. And so it doesn't happen all the time. I'm just happy that it happened for us in year two.
You know, you've been around here for a long time. I mean, you went to high school locally at Tacoma Academy. I'm assuming that was the Tacoma Academy that existed on University Boulevard, right? In Tacoma?
I'm sorry, I missed you on that one.
You went to Tacoma Academy. You grew up here. You know, you came to the U.S., you were 2 years old. I said that Tacoma Academy, which moved around, that you probably played for when it was on University Boulevard, right?
So it's always been on Carroll Avenue, right off of University Boulevard.
Right off, yeah, that's so, what I meant.
Yeah, right off of University Boulevard. Yeah, played at Tacoma Academy.
Yeah, so you're so familiar with the DMV and the kind of basketball town that we have. I mean, you were, I think, part of Team Takeover there for a couple of years. Do you ever, I mean, you do leave and you do recruit. What you've recruited it, you've played in it. What is it compared to the rest of the country? Is this the best, you know, youth basketball, high school basketball in the nation?
I honestly, I'm going to be biased, and I hope none of my non-DMV people are listening to this call. but no, I'm biased, and I think the DMV does have, and it's proven. You know, if you look at the last couple of national championships, if you go back a decade, I want to say 8 or 9 of those teams, with the exception of that Baylor team that won during COVID, you know, the Villanova teams, the UConn teams, there's been a guy from the D.C. area on each roster. Right. And I think that tells you a little bit of what you have to know. A lot of coaches hire coaches from this area because they want in the DMV. And again, it's not fair just because we've got such a large population and one small demographic. But to say the least, you know, being able to play in the BCL, being able to play, you know, in the WCAC, where, you know, at some other, you know, areas and some other demographics, you might get 2 or 3 really strong games because you're playing out of your league or out of your city. The WCAC, you know, the BCL, and even some of the public school leagues in the DMV, it doesn't allow a night off. You're playing against really, really good programs. You're playing against really well-coached programs. And I think that just helps our guys when they do get to college and the success that they find.
I thought the PVI team from last year, the Paul VI team, was one of the best high school teams I've ever seen. How much of them did you get to see?
This past year or the year before? Because they've been pretty damn good the last...
They were. I thought this year, I mean, they had... I mean, it was 4 or 5-star guys, right? 3 5-stars, 6 4-star guys. I don't know if I've ever seen a roster high school-wise... Yeah. Other than a basketball academy that loaded.
Yeah, yeah. Now you know how I felt when I was at Maryland for the 1 year. I was trying to figure out who the hell I wanted to recruit, because that team was pretty much the same thing. You know, you had, you know, the big fella going to Duke. You had Darren Harris going to Duke. You got Deshaun Harris-Smith, who I recruited to Maryland, and then a few other guys. And so, I mean, you know, Coach Glenn Farrell over there, he's done a phenomenal job.
Great job.
Over the last couple of years, man, and getting those guys to Paul VI, you know, a program that when I was coming up, they were in the WCAC, but nobody really paid attention to him. And he's just done such a phenomenal job. And, you know, I wish they were still in our backyard, because they literally, you know, used to be 0.5 miles away, but then they moved out to Loudoun County, so they're a little bit further out. But, you know, you talk about a program that's been, you know, very dominant over the last couple of years, and he's still got – continue to develop as well.
Yeah, we got you back. We lost you there for a second. All right, let's talk some Olympic basketball. Steve Kerr's got quite a – talking about a loaded squad. The U.S. is loaded. Is there – give me a team that you think even has a shot of winning gold instead of the U.S.
Honestly, and this is probably shouldn't say this. I've been so locked in with my team. The first chance that I actually got to watch any of those games was yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, the South Sudan and Team USA team. I know a few teams that are in the Olympics, but I haven't paid enough attention to know who's going to give them a fight. To be honest with you, I don't see it happening. I think this is as dominant as it gets. I think they're figuring, you know, they're trying to figure some things out, just because, you know, they are. You know, at the end of the day, it's the dream team. Everyone's going to give them their best, and I think that they know that. And so you've got a bunch of different guys that are going to be able to step up, and, you know, as you're seeing, different guys that play, different guys that don't. And I'd hate to be Steve Kerr right now, because that might be the best basketball problem to have in the world right now.
Yeah, I mean, you got 12 guys, and he's not playing 2 of them every night, and there was the big controversy over the first game of Jason Tatum not even playing. Because you played internationally for Nigeria and played in the Olympics, what is the international opinion, if you feel like you understand that sentiment, of the U.S. team now? Because internationally, obviously, the game's grown so much, and the competitive level is much different than it was with the 92 Dream Team, obviously. But what is the feeling when you get into these international competitions and the U.S. is in it?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, you know, you talk about the grassroots here in the States versus, you know, I guess you could say the counter of the grassroots overseas. A lot of these guys, a lot of these kids, they're playing with a professional mindset at such a young age. You know, there is no college. And so when you come up with some of the grassroots teams and the farm teams, you're playing at 12 and 13, you're playing against pros, you know, 15, 16, you're playing against pros. I remember my run playing overseas, playing the 7 or 8 years I played. There was always one or two young guys that practiced with us every day. They didn't get in games, but you're talking 14, 15-year-olds. I'll use Dennis Schroeder as an example. When I played in Germany on Braunschweig Phantoms, he was on the second division team, but he was practicing with us, and essentially he was, you know, the third point guard. I knew then he was going to be a pro because of how hard he played and how well he understood the game. And so it's not a surprise to me that now, you know, 10, 11, 12 years later, he's a professional playing at the highest level. And so I would just say the mindset of how serious the players take the game. It's not so much a red carpet. It's not so much a silver spoon. They don't go through, you know, the AAU process where they're given shoes. I mean, some of these guys are essentially playing professionally and playing for free.
Right.
And if that doesn't motivate you to play at the highest level, you know, I don't know what does. And so when you have that dynamic, you know, years later of a bunch of guys that went through that are now playing at the international level, you know, representing their countries, you're going to get some damn good basketball players that understand the game. They might not be as athletic, but they really, really understand the game. And, you know, the international game just gets a little bit more complicated for those NBA guys, because that's not the type of competition, you know, different schemes that they're seeing for, you know, 90 to 100 games.
George Mason basketball coach Tony Skin joining us courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. You know, when you were mentioning your international career, and I just looked it up, it looks like you played in four or five different countries minimum. I'm always fascinated by guys like you, you know, because internationally, you got a chance, and I'll have you describe the countries that you lived in. You just had a completely different life experience than you would have had you been in the NBA. Now, the compensation was different as well, but I'm wondering, you know, now that you are, you know, you're a coach and you're older, do you look back on that as an incredible experience? And if you could just share with us, you know, where you played and for how long?
Yeah, no, 1,000% I look at it as an experience that I wouldn't trade for anything in the world, not a single dollar. You know, having a chance to learn just different places, learn different cultures. I mean, my first year, it was a rough one. And you hear of some of these horror stories. And for the most part of my career, I was fortunate enough to where I didn't really have that. It was pretty smooth. But my first year was pretty rough. You know, I ended up going overseas, going to France. I got there late, you know, because my son was being born on the day that they wanted me to come to training camp. And I'm 170 pounds soaking wet, 6 foot. I don't need 3 weeks to get in shape. And right. So, I showed up to training camp, you know, 3 or 4 days late. That even, you know, didn't impress the staff. And 3 weeks later, you know, I was sent home. And then I had another chance to go back to Croatia, with KK Split, a pretty famous team that has had some really big time guys, you know, Vlade Divac, Tony Kukoc. That's the team that, in the program, those guys came from. But then I was playing for free for, you know, a month and a half. So I had to leave there. And so this is all happening within, you know, 3 or 4 months. And that light bulb and that tunnel starts to close. And you start to think, is this really what, you know, European basketball is about? And then I got my next opportunity to go back to France. And I did well. Played for a coach who took a chance on me towards the end of my first year. End up doing really, really well and spent, you know, 3 years in France as one of the top five scorers. And, you know, I loved it in France and, you know, my time was kind of up and I played myself into the Italian league, which I would say is probably my favorite. It's probably my favorite year in competition just because the Italian culture, the league is well-respected.
Where were you living? Where was it, in Rome or were you in Tuscany? Where were you?
So I was in Tuscany. I was in Pistoia, okay. which is really, you know, right in between Pisa in Florence. I was smack dab in the middle. If I drove 30 minutes to one way, I'd be at Pisa. 30 minutes the other way, I was in Florence. And so that was by far my favorite year and some change. I then went on to play in Germany in Braunschweig, which is, you know, pretty much central, you know, central Germany. And then played also in Israel and, you know, obviously played in the Olympics and was on my way to the Ukraine until I got injured, which, you know, essentially was the end of my career with a bad injury, and then got into coaching. And so I've had some stops, man, and I would say just that experience alone, you know, I tell people all the time, man, I'd rather go to Europe than to go anywhere else in the States, to be honest with you, because I enjoyed it. I learned a lot, built some relationships, and it's actually helped me now as a coach, because some of those relationships come back full circle and you end up recruiting somebody, talking to a coach that you played with or played against. And so those things have helped me tremendously as a coach, and I'm probably not sitting here as the head coach at George Mason if I don't go through those experiences.
Yeah, I think that's incredible. And, you know, probably somebody you even maybe have coached with, Darren McClinton, who's a friend of mine, had that long international career as well, and had all those stories about, you know, the language issues and, you know, living conditions. And, you know, some places were great, some places were really rough.
I got a story. Darren McClinton is actually like one of my big brothers. You know, back in the day when I was running around the gym and getting kicked out of the gym because I wasn't good enough, you know, Darren McClinton, you know, Steve Francis, the Jason Mascaris, those guys were all in the gym. And so Darren ended up just kind of being my big brother. And the irony behind that is my first professional game when I was in Croatia was against Darren. He was playing in Bosnia. I was playing in Croatia. And I say this all the time. I joke around. I had a triple-double on Darren McClinton, except the triple-double was 12 turnovers. that's hilarious.
Yeah, not the kind you want, but still an incredible experience. By the way, can you believe that we're coming up on 18 years? Actually, it'll be 19 years since the run to the Final Four. Do you guys still stay in touch? Do you get together with Coach Larrañaga? I mean, tell me about sort of the relationships from, you know, that team with all of those players.
Yeah, I mean, when you do something like that, when you do something so special like that, you don't lose contact. You know, I've always been in contact with Coach Larrañaga. You know, he's been instrumental in, you know, just kind of my my journey through coaching. I actually spent some time in Florida. Back in June, I went to go have lunch with Coach Larrañaga. And so I'm always, you know, in contact with him. And then our group in general, we've got a Final Four chat that's 18 years old. And, you know, it's safe to say that we're still going at it in that group chat about different things 18 years later. But it's a very, very close knit. I've got Lamar Butler, who obviously was my backcourt teammate. He's on staff here at the player development. You know, Fowler Campbell is still around. And John Vaughn is, you know, he's big man on campus doing some different things at the university. And so we're still a very, very close group. Tim Burns, who's now one of the better trainers in the country in the New York City area. You know, he's a guy that I've relied on from a basketball standpoint over the last couple of years, my times at Seton Hall. And so our group was special then, and it's still pretty special.
Of those games, and we won't talk about the first one, but of the games, you know, Carolina, Wichita, the games at the Verizon Center, I was at both of those. The atmosphere was insane. You know, by the way, Mark Turgeon coached that Wichita State team that you beat.
Sure
and
did.
Then the UConn game. What was is the UConn game the most memorable of all of them?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's what got us to, you know, the Final Four, essentially, against a, you know, arguably one of the better teams in basketball in the last 20 years. You know, you're talking four first-round draft picks, a team that was ranked number one for as many consecutive weeks as you can as you can count college basketball. People forget that. You know, going up against Giants, man, and having the opportunity to beat him for 39 minutes and, you know, 57 seconds. And, you know, unfortunately, the best free throw shooter misses the free throw. They tie it up and it goes in the OT. And having to walk back to that bench, man, it was probably the longest walk in my life just because I knew I could have, you know, I could have iced the game. And, you know, a team like that, you don't beat them in an extra 5 minutes. You got to beat them in the first 40 minutes. And, you know, being able to just overcome that, it was a significant game. It was in our backyard. And obviously, you know, I'm just glad to be a part of it.
What was the story? I think I read this. You'll remember it. That Larrañaga, who was a hell of a communicator and motivator, basically, and I don't even know if it was true, said that UConn had no idea what conference you guys even played in.
Yeah. Yeah, so sometimes my memory gets a little distorted.
It's all right.
You hear a lot of stories that come from Jim Larranega. He's a big-time storyteller.
Yeah.
He tells more stories in a day than I can't remember who. But I do remember just being in the locker room, and, you know, I think it was one of those things where one of the coaches played a clip of one of the players basically, you know, being asked a question about us, you know, who we were, what league we played in. And I can't remember who it was, but they answered it. They didn't really know. It was information that wasn't on the scout report. And, you know, Coach Larranega just kind of used that as motivation. He wrote, you know, CAA on the board, but he didn't put, you know, CAA, the Colonial Athletic Association. He put the Connecticut Assassination Association.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, he's a genius when it comes to keeping it fun, but also understanding what the message and what the goal is.
Really appreciate the time. Enjoyed it. Best of luck on the upcoming season. Maybe we can talk as we get closer to that.
No, absolutely. Appreciate you guys for having me on.
Tony Skin, the head coach at George Mason. Denton wants to talk some college football. He has a favorite team heading into the 2024 season. And Dan Quinn said something about competition earlier this morning that we'll play for you as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. People are talking about Win Donation. One of their customers, Vicky, said, "We couldn't be happier. It was a great experience. Win Donation's about value. And this August, they're giving you a great value during their anniversary sale. Buy two windows, get two free, no limit. And there's no limit to how much you will save because you're going to pay nothing down, no payments, and no interest for two full years. If you act now, you'll get an extra $250 credit from Win Donation. The sale ends the end of the month, so schedule a fast in-home estimate right now. There's nothing to risk. They'll come out to your home. They'll give you a quick estimate, and then you can do with it what you choose, but give them a shot. If you've been thinking about new windows, 866-90-NATION and windonation.com. This from Steven on Twitter, Steven D. Drums. The Daniels pick doesn't say anything about Peters or Quinn. Armchair Charlie would have picked him. It was the number two pick, and it was a pretty easy layup. But Newton and Coleman, if they play well, we got us a front office. You know, by the time we got to the draft, I think Jaden Daniels was clearly the number two overall pick behind Caleb Williams. Some people actually liked him at number one, but there was quite a debate in the offseason. Let's not, you know, diminish the Drake May contingent out there, the J.J. McCarthy contingent out there, the trade back contingent out there. It was, I think by the time we got there, it had become pretty obvious, but it wasn't necessarily that way. And if they had taken Drake May, I don't think anybody would have blinked. I would have. I wouldn't have liked it, but I think there were a lot of people out there that were big Drake May fans as well. Denton is going to talk a lot of college football, as he did last year during the show. Denton hosts a big XM Sirius college football show on College Football Saturdays. We have quite the season in store because it'll be the first year of the 12-team playoff. Four top seeds that will draw by, and then that weekend of December 20th, 20th and 21st, we'll have four games, four first-round games at sites, at the actual stadium sites where the teams exist. And there's a team that you really like this year as a surprise team in college football. Who is it?
Well, so there are multiple, but first, Kevin, first.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Give me my theme music.
Oh, we are
haven't
so
haven't heard
back.
That in a long time.
It brings the juices back. I just had to get that in there.
That's a Thursday staple on this show during football season.
So there are a couple teams that I really like this year. You know, one of them, I was kind of like joking back and forth. So one of the teams I wanted to love was Miami. And then you know what I found out? It seems like everybody loves Miami. And then all of a sudden I didn't like them as much, which you can understand, right? When you're first to something, but then everybody seems to pile on, it's like, I don't know if I want to be here because now the public's going to jump in on this. So I'm a little off Miami, but the team that I love the most this year as a surprise team is Virginia Tech. You know, I think when you look at the ACC, you see Clemson at the top. You see Florida State at the top. I don't love either of those two teams. You know, DJ Uiagalelei, who's now the quarterback of Florida State, for anybody right. that did not know, he's on his third school now.
DJU, to me, just is not great, period.
He's a college quarterback.
Yeah.
That's what he is. And we had those two games at Clemson, what feels like an eternity ago. It was like 4 years now when he came in for Trevor Lawrence. And then he just has never been able to really, really put it together. I mean, he was okay last year at Oregon State, and that team was really good. But I don't love him as a quarterback to win a conference. And even though the ACC is weak, I look at Clemson with Cade Klubnik, and somehow I feel even worse about him. And I look at Virginia Tech. They made a lot of good progress towards the end of the season last year. I really like Brent Pry as a head coach.
What year is this for him? Second?
This is second or third. Uh-huh. But their quarterback, Kyren Drones, every year, Kevin, I look at guys that I think are going to kind of like burst onto the scene. And Jaden Daniels was very much that last year. Nobody really was talking about him at the beginning of the season. And then, you know, we're in October and you're like, wait a second, this guy's really, really good. I'm not suggesting Drones is going to be Jaden Daniels this year, but he had 17 touchdowns and just 3 interceptions last year. As I mentioned, they started to really pick in to a nice rhythm at the end of last year. And I look at their schedule. They got Vanderbilt, that's a dub, Marshall, Old Dominion. Sorry to my Old Dominion fans out there. That should be a W this year. I know it wasn't last year. It should be a W this year. Their toughest opponent right now, they're at Miami at the end of September, the 27th, and then they're home against Clemson. Outside of that, these are all winnable games for them. You got like, you're on the road against Duke, but this Duke is going to be very different than last year.
Did they beat anybody last year?
At the end of the season, they got crushed by Louisville. They kept it. They beat Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was okay, not great. They didn't have any like marquee great wins, but they started to get into a nice little rhythm at the end of last year. And this Drones who doesn't turn the ball over, right? So, and then you look at their roster. They bring back a lot of the same guys. I know the transfer portal is a part of this year's game, and every year it feels like we get somebody that bursts onto the scene out of the portal. But I'm really selling into some teams this year, buying into some teams this year.
I'd love to see Virginia Tech be back in the mix again. I mean, they've been missing in action from the college football landscape for a while now. And, you know, there was a stretch there, obviously, for all of those years where they were, you know, they were legitimately a contender. And it just hasn't been that way for a while. I would love to see that. In the ACC, I'm assuming you said you liked Miami. It's hard for me after what Mario Cristobal did in that Georgia Tech game to get past that. But is Clemson the favorite or Florida State is the favorite, you said?
Florida State is the favorite, but I'm pulling up the official odds right now. They're plus 270. Clemson's plus 390. Miami is plus 440. So they're all incredibly close. Then Virginia Tech is 10-1 as it stands. Like, I love Cam Ward, who comes over from Washington State to Miami. But Mario Cristobal, I don't have any hair on my head. But if I did have hair on my head and I was a Miami fan, I wouldn't have hair on my head.
You know, the other guy that went to Miami, and I'm pretty sure it was Miami, it could have been Florida State, but the running back from Oregon State last year, I loved Martinez. Mm-hmm. I thought he was one of the best running backs and best pro prospects. He went back. He obviously got a big NIL deal. He's at Miami, right? Or is it Florida State?
I believe he went to Miami.
Yeah. That guy to me was so impressive for Oregon State in some of their games last year. I actually thought he would be somewhere in the third, fourth round had he come out after last year. But anyway, all right. So Virginia Tech, Hokie fans, and there are a lot of them, as we know, in this area, and many that listen to this program, because I hear from them during college football season, and they're like, you're not talking enough about Virginia Tech. And the reason here in recent years is they haven't been very good. Bottom line.
By recent years, you mean the last 15.
Has it been 15 years since Beamer left? No. It's been...
No.
Has it been...
It's been a little less than that, but they really haven't entered the season with real expectations and then proceeded to live up to those since I was in high school, which, as much as I hate to admit it, is now much closer to 15 years than I'm comfortable with.
The Memphis guy, Justin Fuente, I think, who replaced him, right? Mm-hmm. He was the coach at Memphis. Was that it for him in terms of opportunities to be a head coach?
Probably. I mean, they went 8-4 one year, 8-4 in 2019. That was their best year under him. I mean, maybe he goes to, well, I guess there is no Nick Saban island of misfit coaches to turn you back into, or the Nick Saban rehab facility, shall we say. So that might be it for him. Unless he goes, I mean, you can go to a G5 place again, build up a reputation, and then, you know, get a job in a couple years.
Frank Beamer's last year, 2015. And they were 7-6. They were in a bowl game, but they were not ACC contenders. You have to go back to 2011 when they finished first in the Coastal in the ACC.
Jeez, that's a long time.
And made it to the Sugar Bowl. That's a long time being absent from the big picture, from the upper echelons of college football for a program like that, no doubt. All right, there's somebody else you like, though.
I like Nebraska. Why? Really, really like Nebraska. They have the five-star quarterback, Dylan Raiola. He's a freshman, so I know that's a little iffy at times making that jump, but he was going to go to Nebraska, and then he changed his mind and committed to Georgia. This was before Matt Rhule had taken over, so this was years ago. He committed to Georgia. Matt Rhule takes over. He does have an uncle that's on the staff in Nebraska, the Raiola family. They won championships at Nebraska in the late 90s. They were part of those teams. They go and get him from Georgia. So he's going to go play at Georgia. They get him to come back to Nebraska, which is basically what you hire Matt Rhule to do, to keep whatever sort of local talent that you have that's good in the state. They do that. And then on top of that, like, I know – if you're just an NFL fan, your perspective of Matt Rhule is vastly different than my perspective of Matt Rhule. As a college coach, he is a college coach.
So he's a college coach.
I love Nebraska this year. Their win total 7.5. I'm not thinking they're going to win the Big Ten, but that win total 7.5. They will be in some games that are going to be a little iffy, but I think this is the first year in, similar to Virginia Tech, like 15 years, where they will be on the right side of some of those iffy games. The ball is going to bounce their way, and I think they get to at least eight wins.
They turn the ball over. Some of their games last year were so painful. They were an excellent defensive team. Do they have a lot of what they were defensively coming back?
Yeah, a good amount of what they had last year is coming back. And, I mean, Jeff Sims, God bless him. He was a turnover.
The Colorado game was just horrible.
Oh,
I mean,
so bad.
They actually were the better team except for him in that game. I know that the game got out of hand score-wise, but it was tight throughout. Remember, that was such a hyped game and a massive play for me. I was on Nebraska plus the short number for everything. And it was painful to watch, but all year long, they were really good on defense. So if you're telling me that they're going to be really good on defense again, and they have the quarterback this year in Raiola, it'd be great to see Lincoln rocking again with an actual contender. Where are they being picked in the Big Ten? It's weird this year, right? Because I'm assuming Oregon and Ohio State, Michigan are at the top.
Oregon, Ohio State, the prohibited favorites. Penn State is 5-1, which, by the way, I don't hate. They just need to make Drew Aller good. Michigan is plus 750. Nebraska is they're a long shot. I mean, they're right now they're 60-1 to win the Big Ten, but everybody's a long shot after Michigan.
I'll tell you what, Penn State better win in Morgantown to open up the season, or they're going to be after James Franklin in a big way. I mean, that is a tough spot for them to open up. I can't wait for that. That's the that's week number one, Labor Day weekend, and I think it's the high noon game on Fox.
Yeah, that's one of the better matchups of the week. You got that one, you got Florida-Miami, and then on Sunday you have USC and LSU.
Yeah, they don't play Michigan, I think it is, but they do play Ohio State, but it's at home in Happy Valley. But I think they play both SC and UCLA. Do they play Oregon? I'm pulling up their schedule right now.
I don't know they play Oregon. They do play both LA teams.
Yeah. You don't want to be James Franklin if you go into Morgantown and lose that opener. All right. Something Dan Quinn said earlier this morning that I thought was worth playing. You'll hear it when we come back. So there was a Dan Quinn cut from before practice today during his presser that I actually thought made sense to play. You don't get a lot from him all the time. You got a lot from him today, and we played a bunch of his sound bites specific to some players like De'Ami Brown and Daron Payne. But he was asked about the roster with so much turnover and sort of, you know, their impressions of what was here when they got here. You'll hear the question, you'll hear the answer. Here it is.
With a roster that turned over so much, how do you balance kind of the guys we signed, we scouted, we drafted versus the guys that were here as they go into competition?
You know, I didn't have any bias in that regard. And so that was also part of the free agency, the draft part, to say that there isn't a sacred cow that, you know, was told no matter what, this has to happen. And so I think as an NFL ball player, they don't want to. And many times they have to read between the lines and that, and that's not what we're about here. If we're going to say we're going to be about competition, then we're going to have moments like today where we're going to compete. And it's not on reputation. It's on the performance. And I think every good ball player knows that. It's like, you know, what are you doing? That's the performing. That's the reputation, not what you have done. And so days like today where you just say there's going to be competitions all over, that's where it goes down.
He hasn't coached a game yet, and he hasn't had a 2-3 game losing skid yet. But the reputation of him being a very good communicator with that group of football players and being able to connect, I think a lot of the answers that he's given kind of tell you why. Long way to go, though, before we start playing real games. I am heading on vacation. I'm going to Ireland. Leaving tonight. I'll be back right in time for the first preseason game when they play the Jets. And then I'll be back that following Monday to start talking about games. I know it's just preseason games, but we will at least have a game under our belt, Denton. Linnell's in next. Doc will be in for me tomorrow and next week, so obviously.
Well, just listen. Next week. I'm in tomorrow.
Who is?
I'm in tomorrow. Doc's in next week.
You're in tomorrow. Doc's in next week. All right. Listen to Denton. Listen to Doc. And I will be back, and I'll have, I'm sure, stories to tell. Hopefully some good golf stories. All right. That's it for the day. Linnell's standing by, ready to take over. So there was a Dan Quinn cut from before practice today during his presser that I actually thought made sense to play. You don't get a lot from him all the time. You got a lot from him today, and we played a bunch of his sound bites specific to some players like De'Ami Brown and Daron Payne. But he was asked about the roster with so much turnover and sort of, you know, their impressions of what was here when they got here. You'll hear the question, you'll hear the answer. Here it is.
With a roster that turned over so much, how do you balance kind of the guys we signed, we scouted, we drafted versus the guys that were here as they go into competition?
You know, I didn't have any bias in that regard. And so that was also part of the free agency, the draft part, to say that there isn't a sacred cow that, you know, was told no matter what, this has to happen. And so I think as an NFL ball player, they don't want to. And many times they have to read between the lines and that's not what we're about here. If we're going to say we're going to be about competition, and we're going to have moments like today where we're going to compete. And it's not on reputation, it's on the performance. And I think every good ball player knows that. It's like, you know, what are you doing? That's the performing, that's the reputation, not what you have done. And so days like today where you just say there's going to be competitions all over, that's where it goes down.
He hasn't coached a game yet, and he hasn't had a 2-3 game losing skid yet. But the reputation of him being a very good communicator with that group of football players and being able to connect, I think a lot of the answers that he's given kind of tell you why. Long way to go, though, before we start playing real games. I am heading on vacation. I'm going to Ireland. Leaving tonight. I'll be back right in time for the first preseason game when they play the Jets, and then I'll be back that following Monday to start talking about games. I know it's just preseason games, but we will at least have a game under our belt, Denton. Linnell's in next. Doc will be in for me tomorrow and next week, so obviously...
Next week. I'm in tomorrow.
Who is?
I'm in tomorrow. Doc's in next week.
You're in tomorrow. Doc's in next week. All right. Listen to Denton. Listen to Doc. And I will be back, and I'll have, I'm sure, stories to tell. Hopefully some good golf stories. All right. That's it for the day. Linnell's standing by, ready to take over.